Star Wars, The Last Command by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 8, side 2. Sounds like this is it, Leia murmured, surreptitiously raising her hand near her mouth and hoping the three Kubaz sitting across the lounge conversation ring from her wouldn't notice the odd behavior. Watch carefully. There were acknowledging murmurs from both of them. Lowering her hand back to her lap, Leia looked around. This was it, all right. Possibly the clearest shot at Delta Source they were likely to get. With an assemblage meeting just letting out and a council meeting about to start, the grand corridor was crowded with high-ranking officials. With officials, their aides and assistants, and their droids. On one level, Leia had always known how common droids were in the Imperial Palace. On another level, as she was rapidly coming to realize, she'd had no idea how many of them there actually were. There were quite a few 3PO protocol droids visible from where she sat, most of them accompanying groups of off-world diplomats, but some also in the entourages of various palace officials. Hovering over the crowd on repulsor lifts, a set of insectoid SPD maintenance droids were systematically cleaning the carvings and cut glass windows that alternated along the walls. A line of MSE droids scuttled past along the far wall, delivering messages too complex for comm transmissions or too sensitive for direct data transfer, and trying hard not to get stepped on. At the next of the greenish-purple Chahala trees down the line, occasionally visible through the crowd, an MN2E maintenance droid was carefully pruning away dead leaves. Which one of them, she wondered, had the Empire turned into a spy? They're starting, Winter reported quietly, lining up across the corridor. There was a sudden rustle of sound from the comlink, as if Winter had put her hand across the microphone. Another series of muffled sounds, and Leia was wondering if she should go and investigate when a man's voice came on. Consular Organa Solo? Yes, she said cautiously. Who is this? Lieutenant Mackel Kendi, Consular, he said. Palace Security. Are you aware that a third person is tapping into your comlink signal? It's not a tap, Lieutenant, Leia assured him. We were holding a three-way discussion with General Bel Iblis. I see, Kendi said, sounding a little disappointed. Probably thought he'd stumbled onto Delta Source. I'll have to ask you to suspend your conversation for a few minutes, Counselor. We're about to do a sweep of the Grand Corridor, and we can't have stray comlink transmissions in the area. I understand, Leia said. We'll wait until you're finished. She shut off the comlink and replaced it in her belt, her heart beginning to thud in her ears. Twisting casually around in her seat, she made sure she could see the entire end of the grand corridor. If there was an espionage droid present, he'd be shuffling this direction as soon as he noticed the sweep team coming from the other end. Overhead, the hovering cleaning droids had been joined by a new set of SPDs, moving down the corridor as they methodically checked the upper walls and convoluted contours of the vaulted ceiling for any microphones or recording systems that might have somehow been planted there since the last sweep. Directly beneath them, Leia could see Lieutenant Kendi and his squad, walking through the milling diplomats in a militarily straight line stretched across the corridor, and watching the displays of their shoulder-slung detectors. The line reached her lounge area, passed it, and continued without incident to the end of the corridor. There, the squad waited, letting the SPD droids and a group of wall-hugging MSEs finish their part of the sweep and catch up. Reformed again, the entire group disappeared down the hallway toward the inner council offices. And that was that. The entire grand corridor had been swept, and had obviously come up negative, and not a single droid had scurried out ahead of the sweep. Something off to the side caught her eye. But it was just the MN2E maintenance droid she'd noticed earlier, rolling up to the Chahala tree that sprouted out of the floor beside her conversation ring. Clucking softly to itself, the droid began poking delicate feelers through the branches, hunting for dead or dying leaves. Dead or dying, rather like their theory. With a sigh, she pulled out her comlink. Winter? Garm?
Here, Your Highness,
Winter's voice came promptly. So am I, Bel Iblis added. What happened? Leia shook her head. Absolutely nothing, she told them. As far as I could tell, none of the droids even twitched. There was a short pause. I see, Bel Iblis said at last. Well, it may just be that our droid doesn't happen to be here today. What we need to do is send Winter back to Ghent and have her add droids into the list. What do you think, Winter? Leia asked. I can try, the other woman said hesitantly. The problem will be identifying specific droids. Externally, one 3PO protocol droid looks basically like any other. We'll take whatever you can get, Bel Iblis said. It's here, though, somewhere close by. I can feel it. Leia held her breath, stretching out with her Jedi senses. She didn't have Bel Iblis's fine-honed warrior's intuition, nor did she have Luke's far deeper Jedi skill. But she could sense it, too. Something about the Grand Corridor. I think you're right, she told Bel Iblis. Winter, you'd better head down and get busy on this.
Certainly, Your Highness.
I'll come with you, Winter, Bel Iblis volunteered. I want to see what's happening with the Stardust plan. Leia shut off the comlink and leaned back in her seat, fatigue and discouragement seeping into her mind despite her best efforts to hold it back. It had seemed like such a good idea, using Ghent's decrypt to try to identify Delta Source. But so far, every lead had simply melted away from in front of them. And time was running out. Even if they were able to keep Ghent's work a secret, which was by no means certain, each of these failed gambits simply brought them closer to the inevitable day when Delta Source would finally notice all the activity and shut down. And when that happened, their last chance to identify the Imperial spy in their midst would be gone. And that would be a disaster. Not because of the leak itself. Imperial intelligence had been stealing information since the Rebel Alliance was first formed, and they'd managed to live through it. What was infinitely more dangerous to the New Republic was the deepening aura of suspicion and distrust that Delta Source's mere existence had already spread through the palace. Consular Felia's discredited accusations against Admiral Akbar had already shown what such distrust could do to the delicate multi-species coalition that made up the New Republic. If that leadership was found to contain a genuine Imperial agent. Across the conversation ring, the three Kubaz got to their feet and headed away, circling around behind the Kahala tree and the MN2E droid working alongside it, and disappearing into the traffic flow down the corridor. Leia found herself staring at the droid, watching as it eased a manipulator arm carefully through the branches toward a small cluster of dead leaves, clucking softly to itself all the while. She'd had a brief run-in with an Imperial espionage droid on the Nogri home planet of Honor, a run-in which could have spelled disaster for her and genocide for the remnants of the Nogri race. If Bel Iblis was right, if Delta Source was in fact merely a droid and not a traitor. But it didn't really help. The Empire simply could not have infiltrated an espionage droid into the palace without the collaboration of one or more of the beings here. Security invariably did a complete screening of every droid that came into the palace, whether on a permanent or temporary basis, and they knew exactly what to look for. Hidden secondary espionage programming would show up like a burst of pale red against the subtle background pattern on that kahala tree. Leia frowned, staring at the tree, as her chain of thought jolted to a halt. Another small burst of red appeared on the slender trunk as she watched, sending a pale red ring rippling outward and around the trunk until it faded into the quiet purple background turmoil. Another flicker followed, and another, chasing each other around the trunk like ripples from a dripping waterline. All of them more or less the same size, all of them originating from the same place on the trunk. And each of them exactly in time with one of the clucking noises from the MN2E droid. And suddenly then it hit her, like a violent wave of icy water. Fumbling at her belt with suddenly trembling fingers, she keyed for the central operator. "This is Counselor Organa Solo," she identified herself. "Get me Colonel Bremen in security. Tell him I've found Delta Source." They had to dig nearly 8 meters down before they found it. A long, fat, age-tarnished tube half buried in the side of the kahala tree's taproot, with 1,000 slender sampling leads feeding into one end and a direct transmission fiber snaking out the other. Even then, it took another hour and the preliminary report before Bremen himself was finally convinced. "The techs say it's like nothing they've ever seen before," the security chief told Leia, Bel Iblis, and Mon Mothma as they stood on the scattered dirt around the uprooted kahala tree. "But apparently, it's reasonably straightforward. Any pressure on the kahala tree's trunk, including the pressure created by sound waves, sets off small chemical changes in the inner layers of bark." "Which is what creates the shifting colors and patterns?" Mon Mothma asked. "Right," Bremen nodded, wincing slightly. "Obvious in hindsight, really. The pattern changes are far too fast to be anything but biochemical in origin. Anyway, those implanted tubes running up into the trunk continuously sample the chemicals and shunt the information back down to the module on the taproot. The module takes the chemical data, turns it back into pressure data, and from there, back into speech. Some other module, maybe farther down the taproot, sorts out the conversations and gets the whole thing ready for encrypting and transmission. That's all there is to it." "An organic microphone," Bel Iblis nodded, "with no electronics anywhere in sight for a counterintelligence sweep to pick up." "A whole series of organic microphones," Bremen corrected, glancing significantly at the twin rows of trees lining the grand corridor. "We'll get rid of them right away." "Such a brilliant plan," Mon Mothma mused, "and so very like the Emperor. I'd always wondered how he obtained some of the information he used against us in the Senate." She shook her head. "Even after his death, it seems, his hand can move against us." "Well, this part's about to be stilled anyway," Bel Iblis said. "Let's get a team up here, Colonel, and dig up some trees." Chapter 18. In the distance, far across the scarred plain, there was a glimmer of reflected light. "Mezik's coming," Carty commented. Gillespie turned his attention from the refreshments table and squinted out past the crumbling fortress wall. "Someone's coming anyway," he agreed, putting down his cup and the cold brewalki he'd been munching on and wiping his hands on his tunic. Pulling out his macro binoculars, he peered through them. "Yeah, it's him," he confirmed. "Funny, he's got two other ships with him." Carda frowned at the approaching spot. Two other ships. Take a look, Gillespie said, handing over the macro binoculars. Carda held them up to his eyes. There were three incoming, all right. A sleek space yacht and two slender, highly vicious-looking ships of an unfamiliar design. You suppose he's brought some guests? Gillespie asked. He didn't say anything about guests when he checked in with Aves a few minutes ago, Carda said. Even as he watched, the two flanking ships left the formation, dropping to the plain below and vanishing into one of the deep ravines crisscrossing it. Maybe you better check. Maybe I'd better, Carda agreed, handing back the macro binoculars and pulling out his comlink. Aves, you have some idea on our incoming? Sure do, Aves' voice came back. Gimmicked ideas on all of them, but we read them as the distant rainbow, the sky claw, and the raptor. Carda grimaced. The designs might not be familiar, but the names certainly were. Mazik's personal transport and two of his favorite customized fighters. Thank you, he said, and shut down the comlink. Well? Gillespie asked. Carda returned the comlink to his belt. It's just Mazik, he said. What's that about Mazik? Niles Ferrier's voice put in. Carda turned. The ship thief was standing behind them at the refreshments table, a generous helping of charred pirky nuts cupped in one hand. I said Mazik was coming, he repeated. Good, Ferrier nodded, popping one of the nuts into his mouth and cracking it loudly between his teeth. About time. Finally get this meeting going. He sauntered off, crunching as he went, nodding at Dravis and Klingon as he passed. I thought you didn't want him here, Gillespie muttered. Carda shook his head. I didn't. Apparently the feeling wasn't universal. Gillespie frowned. You mean someone else invited him? Who? I don't know, Carda admitted, watching as Ferrier wandered over to the corner where Elor and his group had gathered. I haven't found a way to ask around without looking either petty, suspicious, or overbearing. Anyway, it's probably quite innocent. Someone assuming that all those at the original Trogan meeting should continue to be involved.
The lack of an invitation notwithstanding?
Carda shrugged. Perhaps that was assumed to be an oversight. At any rate, calling attention to it at this point would only create friction. Some of the others already seem resentful that I've apparently taken over management of the operation. Gillespie tossed the last bit of broalky into his mouth.
Yeah, maybe it's innocent, he said darkly, but maybe it's not.
We're keeping a good watch on the likely approaches, Carda reminded him. If Ferrier's made a deal with the Empire, we'll see them coming in plenty of time.
I hope so, Gillespie grunted, surveying the refreshments table for his next target. I hate running on a full stomach.
Carda smiled, and he was starting to turn away when his comlink beeped. He pulled it out and flicked it on, eyes automatically turning to the sky. Carda, he said into it.
This is Torve, the other identified himself. And from the tone, Carda knew something was wrong. Could you step downstairs a minute?
Certainly, Carda said, his other hand dropping to his side and the blaster holstered there. Should I bring anyone?
No need. We're not having a party or anything here.
Translation. Reinforcements were already on their way.
Understood, Carda said. I'll be right there.
He shut off the comlink and returned it to his belt.
Trouble? Gillespie asked, eyeing Carda over his glass.
We've got an intruder, Carda said, glancing around the courtyard.
None of the other smugglers or their entourages seemed to be looking his direction.
Do me a favor and keep an eye on things here.
Sure. Anyone in particular I should watch?
Carter looked at Ferrier, who had now left Elor and was heading toward Parta and her fellow Hodin.
Make sure Ferrier doesn't leave.
The main part of the base had been set up 3 levels below the top remaining floors of the ruined fortress, in what had probably been the kitchens and ancillary prep areas for a huge, high-ceilinged room that had probably been a banquet area. The Wild Carta was berthed in the banquet chamber itself, a moderately tight fit for a ship its size, but offering the twin advantages of reasonable concealment, plus the possibility for a quick exit should that become necessary. Carter arrived at the high double doors to find Finn Torve and 5 of the crewers from the Starry Ice waiting with drawn blasters.
Report, he said.
We think someone's in there, Torve told him grimly. Chin was taking the Vornskers for a walk around the ship and saw something moving in the shadows along the south wall. The wall closest to the Wild Carter's lowered entrance ramp.
Anyone currently aboard the ship?
Lacton was working on the secondary command console, Torve said. Aves told him to sit tight on the bridge with his blaster pointed at the door until we got someone else there. Chin grabbed some of the Etherway people who were hanging around and started searching through the south end rooms. Duncan is doing the same with the north end ones.
Carter nodded. That leaves the ship for us, then. You two, he pointed to 2 of the Starry Ice crewers, will stay here and guard the doors. Nice and easy. Let's go.
They pulled open one of the double doors and slipped inside. Directly ahead, the Wild Carta's stern rose up darkly in front of them. 150 meters beyond it, glimpses of the blue Hijarna sky could be seen through the broken fortress wall.
I wish we had better lighting in here, Torve muttered as he looked around.
It looks easier to hide in than it really is, Carter assured him, pulling out his comlink. Duncan, Chin, this is Carter. Report.
Nothing so far in the north end rooms, Duncan's voice came promptly. I sent Corvus for some portable sensor equipment, but he's not back yet.
Nothing here either, Captain. Chin added.
All right, Carter said. We're coming in around the starboard side of the ship and heading for the entryway. Be ready to give us cover fire if we need it.
We're ready, Captain.
Carter slid the comlink back in his belt. Taking a deep breath, he headed out. They searched the ship, the banquet chamber, and all the offices and storerooms on the periphery. And in the end, they found no one.
I must have imagined it, Chin said morosely, as the searchers gathered together at the foot of the Wild Carta's entrance ramp.
Sorry, Captain, truly sorry.
Don't worry about it, Carter said, looking around the banquet chamber.
Cleared or not, there was still an uneasy feeling tugging at him, like someone was watching and laughing.
We all misread things sometimes. If this was, in fact, a misreading... Torve, you're certain you and Lacton covered the entire ship?
Every cubic meter of it, Torve said firmly. If anyone sneaked into the Wild Carta, he was out long before we got here.
What about those Vornsker pets of yours, sir? One of the Starry Ice crewers asked. Are they any good at tracking?
Only if you're hunting Isalamiri or Jedi, Carter told them. Well, whoever was here seems to be gone now. Still, we may have driven him off before he finished whatever it was he came to do. Torve, I want you to set up a guard detail for the area. Have Aves alert the duty personnel aboard the Starry Ice and Etherway as well.
Right, Torve said, pulling out his comlink. What about our guests upstairs? Should we warn them, too?
What are we, their mothers? One of the other crewers snorted. They're big boys. They can look out for themselves.
I'm sure they can, Carter reproved him mildly. But they're here at my invitation. As long as they're under our roof, they're under our protection.
Does that include whoever sent the intruder, Chin spotted? Lacton asked.
Carter looked up at his ship. That will depend on what the intruder was sent to do, he said.
Then, speaking of his guests, it was time he got back to them.
Mazik would have joined them by now, and Ferrier wasn't the only one impatient for the meeting to begin.
Lacton, as soon as Corvus gets here with those scanners, I want the two of you to run a complete check of the ship, starting with the exterior hull. Our visitor may have left us a gift, and I don't want to fly out of here with a homing beacon or timed concussion bomb aboard somewhere. I'll be up in the conference area if you need me.
He left them to their work, feeling once again Mara Jade's absence from the group. One of these days, he was going to have to make the time to go back to Coruscant and get her and Ghent back, assuming he was allowed to do so. His information sources had picked up a vague and disturbing rumor that an unnamed woman had been caught giving assistance to an Imperial commando force on Coruscant. Given Mara's obvious disdain for Grand Admiral Thrawn, it was unlikely she would actually give his empire any help. But on the other hand, there were many in the New Republic starting to edge toward a kind of war hysteria. And given her shadowy history, Mara was an obvious candidate for that kind of accusation. All the more reason for him to get her off Coruscant. He reached the upper courtyard to find that Mazik had indeed arrived. He was standing with the Ho-Din group, talking earnestly with Partah, with the deceptively decorative female bodyguard he'd had at Trogan, an aloof half-step back from the conversation, trying to look inconspicuous. As were the pair of men just behind her, and the four standing around them a few meters away, and the six scattered elsewhere around the edges of the courtyard. Carter paused in the arched entrance, a quiet warning alarm going off in the back of his head. For Mazik to bring a pair of fighting ships to protect him en route was one thing. To bring a full squad of enforcers into a friendly meeting was something else entirely. Either the Imperial attack on Trogan had made him uncharacteristically nervous, or else he wasn't planning for the meeting to remain quite so friendly.
Hey, Carter, Ferrier called, beckoning him over. Come on. Let's get this meeting out of the bay.
Certainly, Carter said, putting on his best host smile as he walked into the room. Too late now to bring some of his own people up here for balance. He would just have to hope that Mazik was merely being cautious.
Good afternoon, Mazik. Thank you for coming.
No problem, Mazik said, his eyes cool. He didn't smile back.
We have more comfortable seats prepared in a room back this way, Carter said, gesturing to his left. If you'd all care to follow me.
I have a better idea, Mazik interrupted. What do you say we hold this meeting inside the wild, Carter? Carter looked at him.
Mazik returned the gaze evenly, his face not giving anything away. Apparently, he was not merely being cautious. May I ask why? Carter asked.
Are you suggesting you have something to hide? Mazik countered. Carter allowed himself a cool smile.
Of course I have things to hide, he said. So does Partah, so does Eller, so do you. We're business competitors after all.
So you won't allow us aboard the Wild, Carter?
Carter looked at each of the smuggler chiefs in turn. Gillespie, Dravis, and Klingon were frowning, clearly with no idea at all as to what this was all about. Partah's Ho-Din face was difficult to read, but there was something about her stance that seemed oddly troubled.
Eller was avoiding his eyes entirely. And Ferrier? Ferrier was smirking. Not obviously. Almost invisibly, in fact, behind that beard of his. But enough. More than enough. And now, far too late, he finally understood. What Chin had seen, and what all of them had subsequently failed to catch, had been Ferrier's shadowy defil. Mezik's men were here. Karda's were three levels down, guarding his ship and base against a danger that was long gone. And all his guests were waiting for his answer. "The wild Karda is berthed down below," he told them, "if you'd care to follow me." Duncan and Torve were conversing together at the foot of the wild Karda's entrance ramp as the group arrived. "Hello, Captain," Duncan said, looking surprised. "Can we help you?" "No help needed," Karda said. "We've decided to hold the meeting aboard ship, that's all." "Aboard ship?" Duncan echoed, his eyes flicking over the group and obviously not liking what he saw. Small wonder. Among the smuggler chiefs, aides, and bodyguards, Mazik's enforcers stood out like a landing beacon cluster. "I'm sorry. I wasn't informed," he added, hooking the thumb of his right hand casually into the top of his gun belt. "It was a rather spur-of-the-moment decision," Karda told him. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see the rest of his people in the banquet chamber beginning to drift from their assigned tasks as they spotted Duncan's hand signal, drifting into encirclement positions. "Oh, sure," Duncan said, starting to look a little embarrassed. "Though the place really isn't set up for anything this fancy. I mean, you know what the wardroom looks like." "We're not interested in the decor," Mazik interrupted. "Please step aside. We have business to attend to." "Right, I understand that," Duncan said, looking even more embarrassed, but holding his ground. "Problem is, we've got a scanning crew aboard right now. It'll foul up the readings if we get more people coming and going."
"So, foul them up," Ferrier put in. "Who do you think you are, anyway?"
Duncan didn't get a chance to come up with an answer to that one. A whiff of perfume-scented air brushed across the side of Karda's face, and the hard knob of a blaster muzzle dug gently into his side.
"Nice try, Karda," Mazik said. "But it won't work. Call them off, now."
Carefully, Karda looked over his shoulder. Mazik's decorative bodyguard looked back, her eyes cool and very professional.
"If I don't?"
"Then we have a firefight," Mazik said bluntly. "Right here."
There was a quiet ripple of movement through the group. "Would someone like to tell me what's going on here?" Gillespie murmured uncertainly.
"I'll tell you inside the ship," Mazik said, his eyes steady on Karda. "Assuming we all live to get in there, that part's up to our host."
"I won't surrender my people to you," Karda said quietly. "Not without a fight."
"I have no interest in your people," Mazik told him, "or your ship, or your organization. This is a personal matter between you and me, and our fellow smugglers."
"Then let's have it out," Duncan suggested. "We'll clear a space. You can choose weapons."
"I'm not talking some stupid private feud," Mazik cut him off. "This is about treachery."
"About what?" Gillespie asked.
"Mazik."
"Shut up, Gillespie," Mazik said, throwing a quick glare at him.
"Well, Karda?"
Slowly, Karda looked around the group. There were no allies here.
No friends who would stand firmly by him against whatever these phantom charges were that Mazik and Ferrier had concocted. Whatever respect any of them might have for him, whatever favors they might owe him, all of that was already forgotten. They would watch while his enemies took him down, and then they would each take a piece of the organization he'd worked so hard to build. But until that happened, the men and other beings here were still his associates, and still his responsibility. "There's not enough room in the wardroom for anyone but the eight of us," he told Mazik quietly. "All aides, bodyguards, and your enforcers will have to stay out here. Will you order them to leave my people alone?" For a long minute, Mazik studied his face. Then he nodded, a single curt jerk of his head. "As long as they're not provoked, they won't bother anyone. Shada, get his blaster. Karda, after you." Karda looked at Duncan and Torve and nodded. Reluctantly, they moved away from the ramp, and he started up, followed closely by the people he'd once hoped to make into a unified front against the Empire. He should have known better. They settled into the wardroom, Mazik nudging Karda into a chair in one corner as the others found places around the table facing him. "All right," Karda said. "We're here. Now what?"
"I want your data cards," Mazik said. "All of them. We'll start with the ones in your office."
Karda nodded over his shoulder, through the door and down the corridor to the right.
"Access codes?"
"None. I trust my people." Mazik's lip twisted slightly.
"Eller, go get them. And bring a couple of data pads back with you."
Wordlessly, the Duro stood up and left. "While we're waiting," Karda said into the awkward silence, "perhaps I could present the proposal I invited you to Hijarna to hear." Mazik snorted.
"You've got guts, Karda. I'll give you that. Guts and style. Let's just sit quiet for now, okay?"
Karda looked at the blaster pointed at him. "Whatever you wish." Eller returned a minute later, carrying a tray full of data cards, with two data pads balanced on top.
"Okay," Mazik said, as the Duro sat down beside him. "Give one of the data pads to Parta and start going through them. You both know what to look for."
"I must acknowledge at the beginning," Elor said, "that I do not like this."
"I agree," Parta said,
her head appendages writhing like disturbed snakes.
"To fight openly against a competitor is part of business, but this is different."
"This isn't about business," Mazik said.
"Of course not," Karda agreed. "He's already said he has no interest in my organization, remember?"
"Don't try playing on my words, Karda," Mazik warned. "I hate that as much as I hate being led around by the nose."
"I'm not leading anyone by the nose, Mazik," Karda said quietly. "I've dealt squarely with all of you since this whole thing began."
"Maybe. That's what we're here to find out."
Karda looked around the table, remembering back to the chaos that had flooded through the twilight world of smuggling after the collapse of Jabba the Hutt's organization. Every group in the galaxy had scrambled madly to pick up the pieces, snatching ships and people and contracts for themselves, sometimes fighting viciously for them. The larger organizations particularly had profited quite handsomely from the Hutt's demise. He wondered if Aves would be able to beat them off. Aves and Mara.
"Anything yet?"
Mazik asked.
"We will tell you if there is,"
Parta said, her off-pitched tone betraying her displeasure with the whole situation. Karda looked at Mazik. Would you mind at least telling me what it is I've allegedly done?
Yeah, I want to hear it too, Gillespie seconded.
Mazik leaned back in his seat, resting his gun hand on his thigh.
It's very simple, he said. That attack on Trogan, the one where my friend Lishma was killed, appears to have been staged.
What do you mean, staged? Dravis asked.
Just what I said. Someone hired an Imperial lieutenant and his squad to attack us.
Klingon rumbled deep in his throat. Imperial troops do not work for hire, he growled.
This group did, Mazik told him.
Who said so?
Gillespie demanded. Mazik smiled tightly.
The most knowledgeable source there is, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
There was a moment of stunned silence. Dravis found his voice first.
No kidding, he said. And he just happened to mention this to you?
They picked me up poking around Joyol's system and took me to the Chimera,
Mazik said, ignoring the sarcasm.
After the incident at the Bilbringi shipyards, I thought I was in for a rough time. But Thrawn told me he'd just pulled me in to clear the air, that no one in the Empire had ordered the Trogan attack, and that I shouldn't hold them responsible for it. And then he let me go.
Having conveniently implied that I was the one you should hold responsible,
Karda suggested.
He didn't finger you specifically, Mazik said. But who else had anything to gain by getting us mad at the Empire?
We're talking a Grand Admiral here, Mazik, Karda reminded him. A Grand Admiral who delights in leisurely and convoluted strategies, and who has a personal interest in destroying me.
Mazik smiled tightly.
I'm not just taking Thrawn's word for this, Karda. I had a friend do a little digging through Imperial military records before I came here. He got me the complete details of the Trogan arrangement.
Imperial records can be altered, Karda pointed out.
Like I said, I'm not taking their word for it, Mazik retorted. But if we find the other end of the deal here...
He lifted his blaster slightly.
I'd say that would be hard evidence.
I see, Karda murmured, looking at Ferrier.
So that was what his Defil had been doing down here, planting Mazik's hard evidence.
I suppose it's too late to mention that we had an intruder down here a few minutes before you arrived.
Ferrier snorted.
Oh, right. Nice try, Karda, but a little late.
This book is continued on cassette number 9, side 1.